We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Jordan, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times.
We're already seeing some of the colleges, especially the MAC where I went to school at Kent State, you know, struggling to keep all these other Title IX sports and these other sports alive. They're all dead. I mean, Lawrence, let's be real. They're dead. If they can't get that $1 million that they get for going to Columbus or the $1 million going to Illinois, they're dead. I mean, that's what keeps the program afloat. So I don't think that could be stressed enough how dangerous this is to the middle tier of college football and bigger picture college sports.
Israel Adonijay, what did it mean to you to have so many people from different organizations be a part of what you guys did in Austin?
It's everything. You know, I mean, you and I, like, we already know Chicago is truly one of the most philanthropic cities in the world. There's so many givers in this city. At an event like that, not surprised. You know, guys flying in, literally Jets, Packers, Saints from everywhere to be a part of this, to support Sam, to support this community.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Yeah, we had a fun show on Friday, and we talked about a lot of different things. We are hoping to do that again yet today. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Glad that you could be along for the ride. I was so happy to hear Terry Bors on the airways talking about Seth Mason. And it's sad that he passed away at the age of 71. The guy was an absolute giant in the business, and one of the leading reasons why the score even exists. And I've been at the score for a really long time, but I wasn't there at the beginning. So I didn't have a lot of interaction with Seth. The strange thing is that over the last few years, he's reached out to me just like every now and again, just be like, hey, really like that segment. Really think that you're on the right track, like all of that stuff. So, I mean, that meant a lot to me for a guy that was so important to Chicago radio, so important to this radio station in particular, for him to be even paying attention to my show was a real honor. And this was a man who was a true gentleman and a great businessman, and he will be missed. The industry will obviously miss him. His family will obviously miss him, and I will miss him. I will miss the text chats that we would have about the state of sports radio and everything else. So, rest in power to Seth Mason, a real giant, and someone who deserves the undying respect of everyone who is associated or listens to the score. So it was really nice to hear Dan and Terry talking about that. And anytime there's Terry Bors on the score, it's a good thing. Anytime. It just makes the day a little bit brighter. Because Terry's the man. We all know that. Coming up on the show today, Scott Greger of the Daily Herald is going to join me to talk about the White Sox and Michael Kopech, which I will get to momentarily. I want to talk about that before I bring Scott on. My buddy Dave Ross, who, if you didn't hear the House of L Rocky Roundtable, he is the star of that roundtable. He will be on with me at 1 o'clock. We're going to talk about Fight Island and the UFC and Usman versus Masvidal. We'll do that at 1. So if you're a fight fan, if you know someone who's a fight fan, make sure you tell them to tune in at 1. JJ Stankovitz from NBC Sports Chicago is going to join me at 1:30. We're going to talk about the Bears, but we're also going to talk about his cheating-ass Manchester City squad that seemingly bribed their way back into the Champions League. Gotcha! So we'll do that, and we'll also talk a little bit of football. So football and football with J.J. Stankovic coming up at 1:30. We are broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Jordan Malley is the executive producer because Herbie's on his road trip. And I got a text from him last night because I wasn't sure if this was the week that he was going. And I was like, are you producing tomorrow's show? And he's like, nope, I'm in Utah. So Herbie will be back in a few days. Strangely enough, when he comes back, I'll leave. It's like we don't like each other, even though we do. But he's on vacation, and it is a well-earned vacation, but the show is in good hands with Jordan Malley. So let me talk about the events. And I discussed it a little bit on LoHo Daily on Friday. I put out a Kopech episode on Friday. So I was recording some stuff for Baseball Night in Chicago. I was sitting in for Layla, who was sitting in for Cap on Sports Talk Live. And then we got the word, hey, there's going to be an announcement. The White Sox are going to make an announcement at 5 o'clock. I thought like maybe they're going to talk about Moncada, and they did. They did speak about Moncada in some more clear terms by putting him on the injured list, the 10-day injured list. But they told us that it was Michael Kopech who had decided that he was going to opt out of the 2020 season. There's been a lot of speculation. I know that I have been sent all sorts of speculation from a bunch of different people on what's been going on. I feel like the reporting of the people who cover the White Sox beat has been excellent. And got guys like Scott Merkin and James Fegan, they've kept the speculation to a minimum. To me, it's really simple. This is a year where anyone who doesn't want to be a part of what's going on with the 60-game schedule, I'm in support of anyone who decides that they want to play, and I'm in support of anyone who says, I don't think this is for me. And there could be multiple reasons, whether the reasons are, and I don't know if we even have to separate them. I think they can all be in a gumbo together of reasons to not do this. In Kopech's particular case, you are talking about someone that, from all reports, is good to go physically with Tommy John, and he pitched a little bit in spring before spring got disrupted back in March. But my whole thing is, if it makes you uncomfortable, if being off routine makes you uncomfortable, which is what this season is about, this season is about being off routine. If you don't feel like you've had enough time to do what you've needed to do, and remember, Kopech got sent down, technically, I'm using air quotes, you can't see me, but I'm using air quotes, sent to the Charlotte roster, and there hasn't been any minor league baseball that's been played. So all of the things that would go into getting Kopech to the major league roster and to the major league team, those things have not been in place. You are talking about someone who was on kind of a strict throwing program, even in spring training. You're talking about someone who has anxiety and depression issues and has been very clear about those issues. If you add all of those things together and then put COVID on top of it, it's why I'm like, anyone who wants to take a step back from this, they have my full support. Because it's not an easy decision to make. You want to be out there, and it seems like the White Sox are in a space right now where they have an opportunity. Even being a young team, a team that is putting all the parts together, they have an opportunity in this 60-game season. Every team does. I think that there's no one that you can eliminate from maybe winning the World Series this year, which is really great for both baseball teams in town, but particularly for the White Sox and seeing how they're built. It could be a super exciting season for them. It makes me sad that Kopech is not going to be a part of it for this season, and it's going to be close to, I think, 1,000 days. Like maybe like 930, 940 days since he will have pitched for the White Sox in a major league game. I want to go back, Jordan, I want to go back for a second to January and a conversation And I heard Parkins and Spiegel talking about this. I thought they did a really nice job of kind of discussing it in very sensitive in detail. They were talking about the interview that McNeil and Parkins had done with Kopech back in January. And I think that it gives you a glimpse into what he's about and what type of person he is and the types of things that he's dealing with. Take a listen.
I definitely do. And, you know, I think it had to do with me allowing myself to open up about it. It was something that I didn't talk about for a long time, and it kind of crippled me because I was so introverted. And not that I'm not introverted anymore, but I'm a lot more comfortable with who I am, and who I am isn't necessarily the center of attention person. You know, I'm not looking for the spotlight. I'm just looking to get my stuff done and get out. And I think I lied to myself about wanting that spotlight for a lot of my career, and, you know, kind of recognizing it for what it is now. And it is my career and it is what I'm passionate about, but it's not just an excuse to get famous. You know, like, that side of the game is no longer important to me at all. But what it has done is it's allowed me to really focus on being the best version of myself, and that as a competitive athlete and just as a person. And so, to answer your question, yeah, I do feel maybe not necessarily healed. I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't get anxiety anymore, but I'm a lot more comfortable in my own skin.
I'm pumping my fist here to hear you say that, because mental illness, and I've got it, long family history of it. I check a lot of boxes, Michael. You never healed. It's a daily process with medication, talk therapy, and having a support group, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. And it's something that has to be a daily practice, you know. And for me, it's been a routine, you know, a self-care routine, if you will, but it's something that I've had to create for myself to kind of cope with this. And that may sound like overwhelming to some people. Oh, you have to do that just to live a normal life. But you know what? It is just part of me. And for a lot of people, part of their routine in their life would be different to me. But kind of learning to deal with these things and finding things that work for me, yeah, it's just really been comforting. And having that support group is, you know, usually family, and having a wife now that is family. And so I have people around me that are close to me that love me and care about me, and it makes this stuff a lot easier. And, you know, it's I think the reason I like talking about it so much is there's people out there that probably wonder if anyone else goes through this, because I was that person for a long time. And, you know, opening up about it has really allowed me to meet people that have gone through this and have gone through much worse. So it makes my perspective, you know, all the less important, but still that much more valuable.
Michael, what were the watershed moments that led you to seeking treatment? What was the bottom like?
The bottom was just being lost, in a sense. I can't really pinpoint to one thing. You know, I've vaguely talked about having a point of suicidal thoughts, and at that stage in my life, you know, it's not something I'm proud to talk about, but it's something that's very real. And at that stage in my life, I didn't know what I wanted, who I was, what I thought was a normal life, so to speak. And I think by being around people that truly love me and care about me, and not necessarily Michael Kopech, the baseball player, which I, even on my intro there, I've defined myself as a baseball player, but I think now it's more so about me, you know, being a baseball player second. You know, I have a real life and a real support group and a real loving family, and that's really what defines me. And then anything after that is just gravy on top, you know.
So that was Michael Kopech back in January talking with the McNeil and Parkins show. And when you hear that, I'm someone who has, I have some anxiety issues. I actually was having a very anxious moment this past weekend that I was, it's weird because you're not around people and then you're around people and it's weird. Anyway, I am someone who loves routine, and routine helps me get myself to the place where I can be on the air and I can talk about a lot of different things. I'm a creature of it. And a lot of other people are too. They might even not even be anxiety ridden, but you can hear with him talking about how much routine is important to him, how it's helped to balance him out. It's allowed for him to see what his career, what he wants his career to look like as a baseball player. And it also allows him to have a life. And that's something that has become very important to him. So imagine someone who is someone who likes routine being thrown into this, being thrown into a 60-game schedule, being thrown into all these negotiations, all of the different moving parts that are going on right now as we speak with testing and whatnot. I would imagine that everyone is anxious about it. Like, for example, remember how we've been talking about the Cubs and testing? They've got six people who can't be at practice today because they haven't gotten their test back from Saturday. It's stuff like that where if you are a creature of habit, a creature of routine, this is probably not the best environment for you. Now, to be fair, I don't know what's going on with Michael Kopech. I'm just trying to give it context. I just say that I can't blame anyone, especially someone who has gone on the record and talked about issues of anxiety and depression and suicidal thoughts. I can't blame anyone for saying, I don't want to be a part of this. So I hope that he gets what he needs throughout this period of time, that he can relax knowing that he has made the decision to opt out and it's the best decision for him. And hopefully, by the time we get to February of next year, we are watching him again ramp up for a season. But I think that it's the right decision for him. And so far, the White Sox have seemed to have been on board with him making that decision. And Coop had said on to the Sun-Times that he was worried about Kopech. If we're at a place where you're worried about that player, then that player playing is the least of the worries. Like, forget about him playing. It doesn't matter. Make sure that you're taking care of the person. So I applaud the White Sox for trying to take care of the person along with the player. So my hope is that if Michael Kopech wants to talk about all of this and what led to his decision, I welcome it. If he doesn't want to talk about his decision, I'm good with that too. I just want him to be okay. I want him to be in a place where he feels safe, and I want to see him pitch, but when he's ready. And it doesn't have to be anything other than that. When he's ready, we'll all welcome him back and be excited to see that guy and his incredible talent. I'm going to talk with Scott Greger about this and some of the baseball, the domino effect of the baseball side of it with him next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
With me, I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. We started the show talking a little bit about Michael Kopech and his decision to opt out. I want to discuss that further with our buddy Scott Greger, who covers the White Sox for the Daily Herald. He's nice enough to join me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from in Melrose Park, or you can just go to alpamonteford.com. Scott, thanks for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Hey, Lawrence, how you doing? Good to talk to you, always.
Same here. I wanted to know, when this story came out Friday, what was the feeling around the White Sox hearing that Michael Kopech had decided to opt out?
Yeah, you know, I was listening to you, Lawrence, you know, on your last segment there, and yeah, I think you put it pretty well that, you know, it's kind of a bonus right now just to have baseball back at all. There's a lot more going on than baseball, and you know, with Michael's history and just the current situation with the COVID, he's been out almost 2 years. You know, I think they're good. I think obviously they'd like to have him in summer camp here and, you know, get him kind of built back up. But, you know, with Michael, there's a couple more things going on, and, you know, let him do what he needs to do. hopefully get through this season, the short season, and then you have a normal spring, and you know, just kind of see where he's at. I'm sure that's kind of, without them coming out and saying exactly that, I would guess that's kind of where they're at with it.
Let's go back to before spring training shut down. You know, we saw him go out there and throw 101 miles an hour. Where was he as far as the TJ surgery recovery?
He was where he needed to be. I mean, it's usually with TJ, it's at least a year, maybe a little bit more. And he was, you know, September. He was well over that. He was almost a year and a half. You know, the one thing with Michael, though, is that they were bringing him slowly along. I think I heard you say, too, that, I mean, they optioned him to Charlotte right before camp shut down, regular spring training. You know, he pitched one inning, and it was good. It was encouraging. It was something to build off of. And, you know, I think my guess back then in February, March was he probably pitches a couple months at AAA, you know, before they think about bringing him back. So he was probably right where he needed to be. And then, you know, but now you have, what is it, over 3 months with the shutdown, you know, with the COVID shutdown. So, you know, I don't know what kind of a throwing program he was able to stay on, probably back home in Texas or, you know. So you had that in too, Lawrence, and okay, now am I going to try to rush back for 60 games here? It's probably a pretty good decision.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do wonder, and I just wanted to clean up some of the business stuff. Because he was optioned to Charlotte, there's no service time issue here, right? Because he wasn't going to get the service time for being on the Charlotte roster.
Correct. You know what? Like if Michael was in camp right now, summer camp, and he was, you know, he was sharp from throwing the last couple, you know, 3 months, which a lot of guys did. I know like Lucas Giolito was fine, and like, you know, he was thrown to Andrew Vaughn in Sacramento somewhere, you know, probably on a high school field or something. But I mean, if Michael showed up here, you know, in summer camp, ready to go, I mean, just out of the bullpen, you know, like maybe once a week or something, just to kind of build back. And he's on that expanded roster. It's going to be a 30-man roster for the first couple weeks. Then you got some service time there. You know, he'd have some service time. But, yeah, since he was optioned, yeah, I don't think, you know, the White Sox are going to get an extra year of him.
Yeah, I was finding myself getting excited. And we're talking with Scott Greger, who covers the White Sox for the Daily Herald. I was doing the what-ifs. It was like, oh, man, look at this layoff. And this layoff means that maybe you get Kopech and Rodon back to the rotation, yeah, and you're able to do some fun stuff rotationally. But I'm still glad that he decided that he wanted to take some time and walk away, and I support it wholeheartedly. So let's talk about the practical applications of this. What happens now for the pitching plan if everything goes perfectly and you don't lose more players because of injury or COVID? What's their pitching plan as far as a rotation and a bullpen?
You know, Lawrence, it's pretty much the same, even without Kopech. You know, they added Dallas Keuchel, Gio Gonzalez. Gio Gonzalez was a little dinged up his shoulder in spring training. He's back. You have Carlos Rodon back. You know, it's, you know, he missed a lot of time with Tommy John. He missed a year, so over a year. So, you know, it looks like with Rodon, maybe just put him in the bullpen. It's not going to really matter this year with this kind of a season, I don't think. Nobody really cares. I mean, Rodon, we talked to him last week. You know, in spring training, the regular spring training, he was like, no, you know, I'm a starter. I'm coming back. You know, I'm not losing my spot because of injury, which, you know, I can totally understand that. But now, you know, you're looking at this short season. You know, what's a starter going to be able to go? Maybe by the end, maybe 6-7, you know, maybe, you know, right out of the chute, it's probably 3 innings. So, you know, you get – so your rotation right now is probably Giolito, Keuchel, Gio Gonzalez, Dylan Cease, and then Reynaldo Lopez, you know, coming off a really bad season. He's got something to prove. And then you have Rodon, maybe like your long guy, if that's how you want to use him, just to kind of get his arm built back up. Then you have a couple other guys that it'd be interesting to see. You have two more Tommy John guys, Dane Dunning, who they really like, and Jimmy Lambert, who kind of came out of nowhere 2 years ago. He went down. They had so many Tommy John guys go down within like a 6-month, 1 year span. So Jimmy Lambert's an option there. I think they have plenty of pitching to get through 60 games. And, you know, it's unfortunate that Michael Kopech's not going to be a part of it, but, you know, you catch up with him next spring, hopefully.
Scott, let's talk about Ronaldo Lopez for a second. I'm probably in the same boat as the people at the White Sox where I see it. Like, I see, I'm like, okay, that he's got some tools. What's been the struggle in him putting it all together?
We've talked to him about it in spring training and then just, you know, again with him last week in the summer camp now, and it's kind of the same thing with him. You see a lot of guys like Ronaldo, young guys that, you know, they walk a guy and they just lose focus. They give up a home run, they lose focus. I mean, he's always had the arm. He's got an unbelievable arm. It's just, you know, you need a lot more than just the physical. You know, when you're a major league starter, you have to have, you know, Lucas Giolito struggled with the mental side 2 years ago. He led the majors. He had the highest ERA in the majors. He figured that out. So that was something that, you know, it'd be interesting to see because Ronaldo Lopez worked with, you know, did some mental work, you know, last offseason. So over the winter, was in a pretty good place during spring training. He said he's still there now. And it's just a matter with him of, it's like you're going to fail. You're going to walk out. You're going to give up home runs, but don't let it affect the rest of the inning, the next batter. And he's still a pretty young guy too. I mean, you got to learn that kind of stuff. And some guys can, some guys can't. So it's just, you know, he's given himself the mental tools, and now he's just got to, you know, execute it on the mound.
What's covering this been like for you?
Weird. I wrote about it before camp started that this is my 26th year covering the White Sox. And the only thing that even comes close to this is, and it's not even close, was the spring training of 95 with the replacement players. You had Michael Jordan in there, Pete Rose Jr., Dennis Oil Can Boyd. It was just every day was just kind of what's going on. You know, there was no like, you know, like you were mentioning too with Kopech, the routine. You know, everybody likes a routine. I totally agree with that. And spring training, baseball season is a routine. And this is just like, okay, we're having another inter-squad game. There's no, you know, we'll play again today. You know, you don't know. Sometimes it's like, who's at the plate? Who's pitching? You know, what's the count? Why is the catcher calling balls and strikes? And then you're right there. It's like, okay, let's get on to the clubhouse. This game's over. No, we're going to do a Zoom interview. It's just, before March 12th and this all shut down, if somebody would have said this is how it's going to be, you know, in July, people would have been like, you know, this is fiction. So it's weird, but you know what, Lawrence? It's baseball. It's, you know, everybody's gone through a lot with this. And I hope everybody stays healthy. I hope all the players, coaches, you know, there's a lot of problems still with the testing. But at the end of the day, if they could, you know, pull this off, I just think, you know, you got to start somewhere. And, you know, it's baseball, so hopefully it works out.
I was going to ask you about the testing. I know that over on the north side, the Cubs have had all sorts of issues, like getting their results back. What have the folks on the south side said about the mechanism of testing?
Well, you know, I think the one thing that's kind of sticking with me is Steve Cishek, you know, the old Cubs reliever the other day, said he felt safer here than he did. He lives in Florida in the offseason. Because they're getting tested more here. He said he felt safer than he did at home, so that was kind of interesting. I mean, there's nothing 100% completely safe, no matter if you're in a major league clubhouse or you're, you know, at your home or, you know, so it's just the great unknown that we're dealing with. But so far, so good with the White Sox. You know, the one thing that's going to be interesting is Rick Renteria left for California late last week for a family funeral. When he comes back, I'm not sure if he's back today or, but it's supposed to be soon. I mean, does he have to quarantine for 2 weeks? They're just like this, the unknowns in this are, this is something that's never happened before. Nobody's dealt with, you know, so there's just a lot of things, but it's so, you know, so far with the White Sox, I mean, it seems to be going about as well as possible.
When it comes to Luis Robert, and I feel like, look, he's already become like a Twitter legend. Like, people enjoy putting out all the stuff that he's doing. How do you bring along a player like that and without putting too much pressure on that player to be great from the moment they step on the diamond?
I could talk about Luis Robert all day. And I'll just preface it with this, Lawrence. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I was fortunate enough to be able to watch Roberto Clemente play. And I'm not saying that Luis Robert is going to be Roberto Clemente. I mean, I would never say that about anybody. But I have heard that comp with him before. you know, I think with how good can he be or what kind of pressure, it's like the one thing I've noticed about Luis Robert is that he knows what he is. He knows, like, how good he's supposed to be, and he kind of uses it to, you know, to push himself even harder. I mean, he doesn't back away from, you know, how some guys kind of tighten up, especially when they're young, they struggle. I mean, he might struggle. He's going to see a lot of, you know, breaking balls when the season gets going, but he's just phenomenal. I mean, he's been one of these guys that, you know, when he's even in these inter squad games, when it's his turn to hit, you know, you want to make sure you're watching. You don't want to be in the back of the press box or the bathroom or something. But I mean, he just doesn't seem to feel any kind of a pressure, and that's such a key thing. Eloy Jimenez has a lot of that he just has fun and he just wants to play and do well, you know, just use what he's got. And he's got quite a few skills. And Luis Robert has, I think, even a few more skills than Eloy.
Talking with Scott Greger, who covers the White Sox for the Daily Herald, do they have enough organizational depth at third base?
No, they don't. They don't. That's why, you know, I don't know. That's why Andrew Vaughn and German Mercedes have been playing over there. I'm just trying to think, you know, they could move. Lurie Garcia can play everywhere. So I guess, you know, he's your depth, unless Vaughn or Mercedes, you know, just put him over there. And you know what? It's like we were talking about earlier, this is a different kind of a season, you know, depending on what happens with Moncada. You know, Vaughn and Mercedes looked really good. He played some third base at AAA Charlotte last year. So you could probably get by with him. I don't know. Vaughn said he used to play shortstop. But, you know, if you don't want to use Lurie Garcia, you might see Vaughn and, you know, assuming Moncada's not back, you know, you might see some Andrew Vaughn or Mercedes over at third.
What are you kind of looking forward to if the season does get underway? What are you, because I'm almost, I can't decide if I'd rather watch a game in person under these circumstances or watch the game broadcast under these circumstances, because I think that there's so much interest in both of those things.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. You know, one of the White Sox front office people, like before the camp started, just said, you know, I'm not going to tell you guys nothing. You know, when the game starts, I'm not going to tell you not to come here, but you really don't need to be here because, I mean, you can be able to see the game on TV. You're not going to have any clubhouse access. So on the one hand, it's like, boy, you know, just watch it on TV. But on the other hand, you know, you always do see stuff, you know, when you're there, you know, live, just kind of nuance. You can see into the dugouts, things like that, you know. So I'm going to try to go to as many games as I can, and who knows? You know, Lawrence, it's just like the great unknown, like I've been saying, is that, you know, maybe by September, maybe the Chicago Dogs have fans, which I thought was pretty interesting. They had a couple thousand, I believe. You know, maybe by September you can get a couple of thousand in, 5,000 people, you know. I don't think that door has been completely closed yet, but it would definitely, if fans were allowed in, I would definitely want to go check out again.
Is there anything baseball-wise that we should be paying attention to, even in this new normal with the White Sox?
Baseball-wise, as far as like
on the field, like is there a position battle? Is there or is that a thing of the past now? Because everyone's probably going to play.
No, that's interesting. I just wanted to ask you to clarify that because I thought maybe you meant like, what do you think about like the universal DH? There's so many different things. It's like, it's hard to keep track of, you know, the extra innings, the runner starting on second. I guess that's a whole nother segment, but as far as the White Sox go, you know, it's just such an interesting blend. And, you know, I know we've talked about this through the years, Lawrence. I mean, this team hasn't had a winning record in 7 years, no playoffs since 2008. So, you know, this is a good team. I was kind of looking forward to it finally, you know. And I'm sure you were too, that it's just kind of, it's been kind of hard watching this team the last few years through the rebuild. I mean, now they got this great team. They filled every hole. You know, but I guess to answer your question, you know, Nomar Mazara, is he, you know, get a look at him. Is he the guy you want in right field? Edwin Encarnacion, if he's still hitting this year, you know, he's only on a 1 year deal. You know, he's a great fit at DH there. I mean, bring him back for another year. You know, Gio Gonzalez, Dallas Keuchel, that's, you know, two veterans in the rotation. So there's a lot. And then the bullpen, yeah, I mean, there's quite a bit, but it's just there's so much other stuff going on that it takes you a while almost just to get to the daily nuts and bolts of the roster.
When I was down in Arizona before camp got suspended, I thought that the – like you were saying, Scott, like I hadn't been around a White Sox team that had that type of vibe. Like there was a confidence being in that clubhouse. And a lot of it emanates from Tim Anderson. Like he's kind of the lightning rod when it comes to that. But I was encouraged by how much – positivity. There was less going through the motions like I had run into over the last few camps of White Sox. Did I imagine that, or is that a real thing?
No, that was a real thing. It was real because I mean, just look around. I mean, look even last summer. Who was starting for the White Sox? Ross Detweiler. I never can pronounce this guy's name. He's in Korea now. Despaigne.
Yeah, I saw him pitch the other night in Korea. Yeah. Got to win.
Okay, there you go. He's finally found a league that he can compete in. But, I mean, how many of those kind of guys have you seen, like, through the last couple of years? And, so this year, I mean, legitimately, you look up and down that lineup, and they're really, where's the hole at? I mean, I think, like, Nomar Mazzaro is kind of a hole, seen as a hole in right field, but he's 25 years old. He's got four full, years in. He's still a young guy. I mean, I definitely take a look at him. I don't think he's a huge hole like they've had in the past. And their bullpen was solid. They added C-Shack. They have, some good arms in the bullpen. And this is a pretty good team. So maybe once this 60-gamer gets going, that'll come out.
Scott, I appreciate so much you being available and talking about this. And I know you got a scrimmage to go watch.
Oh, yeah.
Now the scrimmages are being broadcast, which is a good thing for everybody.
Thanks
for your time, and thanks for lending a lot of context to what's going on with Kopech and everything around the White Sox.
No problem. Always good to talk to you, Lawrence.
Same here. Scott Greger of the Daily Herald has been covering that team for almost three decades. I love talking with Scott. I love seeing Scott at the ballpark, too. He's on top of it. So that's what he thinks. We're going to take a break. I want to get on to the broadcast side of this for a second. I got something to share with you after a quick timeout. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Look, I would never tell you to leave me unless what I was offering you might be a little bit better. So check this out. Today, there's going to be a White Sox scrimmage on the My Teams app for NBC Sports Chicago at 1:10. I would say put the app on and also listen to me, because at 1 o'clock I'm going to talk a little UFC with Dave Ross. But it's going to be Chuck and Jason Benetti, and they're going to hang out and talk a little bit about what's going on with the Road Grays versus the Home Blacks. I think maybe that's what they'll do. We'll see what they end up choosing as far as their uniform colors for today. But at 1:10 today, and they're going to have a couple of different scrimmages available on the My Teams app throughout the week. Jason Benetti was actually on with Dan Bernstein today, and they were talking broadcasting. I enjoy hearing how things are going to work, and it's been one of my things that throughout this restart of baseball, what are broadcasts going to sound like? How are they going to work? How are they going to bring you in? Well, Dan asked Benetti about how he's already prepared to work in an environment like the one that we're going to see over the next 60 games.
Right is a really tough concept, but I have two things that I think are going to help in my understanding of that. Number one, I've been doing Korean baseball in my living room at 3 a.m. every weekend off a Zoom feed on a MacBook. So I got a shot at bringing energy to something that doesn't have it. But the other thing is, and I think you have this understanding doing minor league baseball and CBA games, like some days there's just nobody there in the minors. And that's nothing against the minors. I love them dearly. But some days there's just not much of a crowd at all. Like, we did a game in Frederick, Maryland in like 2007. There was a long rain delay. I was working for the Salem Avalanche at the time. There was a long, long, long rain delay. We came back. There were very few people in the stands, except like a small birthday party of middle schoolers was there, or maybe early high school.
Was this the Frederick Keys, right? Was it the Frederick Keys?
The Frederick Keys, because the stadium, Harry Grove Stadium, is across from the cemetery where Francis Scott Key is buried.
Yep.
So they're the Frederick Keys. And in the seventh inning, they jingle their keys. So there's this group of kids. And every time a pitch comes, they yell, swing. And our crowd mic is picking up swing every time. So it was basically the 1-2 and a pitch. And they would yell, swing, and I'd go, and a miss. So I just let them say swing for me. And I think it's just kind of an understanding of you do whatever is around, and I'll be reacting off way different cues. But I also think the one variable is the piped-in crowd sound, which I know Major League Baseball wants to have in the stadium. So reacting off that and doing it in a sincere way is going to it's going to take a game or two. I apologize to everybody in advance, but we'll figure it out. And it's really just reacting to whatever sensory experience you're having and trying to amplify it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing, I don't know if there are two guys that are more prepared for this as a tandem than Benetti and Stone. Because you both guys are loquacious. Both guys know how to tell stories. And they're not going to be limited to just the balls and strikes. I'm sure that we're going to hear some Steve Stone stuff that we've never heard before. And I'm here for it. I'm totally here for it. I'm looking forward to seeing, to having like, I'm more concerned about the guys that are doing radio because there's less stuff for them to describe. Like, if you're Andy Mazur or Pat Hughes, like, you're there's just less stuff. So how do you go about painting the picture? It's going to be a really interesting experience for all of us. I know that everyone who's involved in these broadcasts is going to do a great job, but I'm looking forward to learning what they emphasize on the broadcast and what things are added to the broadcast, because we will not have the benefit of seeing as much of the sights and sounds that surround the game. And we might get more sights and sounds of the game, which is pretty exciting. Fight Island happened this past weekend. I wanted to talk to my buddy Dave Ross about that, so we're going to do some UFC talk next here on The Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.